Welcome to Travel Itch Radio. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with my friend and co-host, Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee. And this is the 10th season of Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you enjoy the pleasures of travel from the comfort of your armchair.
Every week at this time, we talk to people representing destinations, hotels, airlines, railroads, car rental companies, and others in the world of travel and hospitality, from authors and bloggers to broadcasters and publicists. If it's got anything to do with travel, it's got everything to do with Travel Itch Radio.
And tonight, on the 401st edition of Travel Itch Radio, our honored guest is Tim Riley, Sandra L. and Monroe E. Trout Director and Chief Curator of America's National Churchill Museum in Fulton, Missouri. Welcome, Tim, to Travel Itch Radio.
Well, thank you, Dan, and thank you, Marilyn. It's very nice to be on.
Glad to have you. And, Tim, you're about to celebrate a major milestone next week, the 75th anniversary of Winston Churchill's famed Iron Curtain speech that he delivered on March 5th, 1946. He delivered it in a mid-Missouri town named Fulton. Why was he there?
Now, that's a great question, and that's a question we get asked every day here at America's National Churchill Museum on the campus of Westminster College, and it's simply because we asked him to come. And I'll take you back 75-plus years ago. At the end of World War II, the Allies were victorious in Europe. The Germans had been defeated. The Americans, the British, and the Soviets, who were our allies at the time, won the war. Then there was a general election in Europe, or in England, rather, and Churchill lost. And Americans have a hard time believing this, that, you know, Churchill won the war, but he lost an election in his home country. Arguably the most popular man in the world loses an election. And you know, Churchill was despondent. His wife, Clementine, tried to console him, saying, sir, honey, this is a blessing in disguise. Churchill said it was very well disguised. It was just hilarious. But then you know, it was in this moment, Churchill received an invitation from Westminster College here in Fulton, Missouri, asking if he'd come make a speech. Now, I'm convinced that letter would have been given to a secretary, as Churchill often did, saying, you know, tell them politely I can't possibly come, but thank them for doing so. However, on the letter, in the margins, in the lower part of the page, was a note that said, this is a wonderful school in my home state. If you come, I'll introduce you. Hope you can do it. Gary Truman.
Oh.
You know, and when President Truman, you know, did that famous postscript in his own hand, Churchill said, you know, I'll be back in the game. I might have lost the election, but I've got more to say. So he accepted that invitation, and he made the journey in March of 1946, 75 years ago, to Fulton, Missouri, and he delivered a speech, a very famous speech that he called the Sinews of Peace. We now call it the Iron Curtain speech, and because of that, there was a museum and memorial set up here in Fulton at Westminster College.
What commemoration do you have planned for the 75th anniversary on March 5th and 6th?
Well, next week, you know, we're taking that speech and putting it in the spotlight. We're really looking at why Churchill made that address in Fulton, Missouri. And, you know, the answer is to that question is simply because Churchill had more to say. You know, he recognized at the end of World War II a very important thing. You know, the Americans went home after the war. The British went home. The Soviet Union, our allies in World War II, stayed put in Central and Eastern Europe. And Churchill saw this, and he knew this would be the next looming threat. So that's when he said famously, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. And Joseph Stalin, who had been our allies in World War II, were poised to be our adversaries. And Churchill makes this speech. You know, it's almost like Babe Ruth calling the shot. He said, this is the next threat, the Soviets. And it was really, in many ways, the beginning of the Cold War. and it happened in the gymnasium at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri. Churchill himself knew he'd hit a home run. He said on the train ride back to Washington after the speech, "I think that was the best speech I've ever given." Now, this from a man who gave quite a few famous speeches. And so that speech will really be at the forefront of the 75th anniversary celebration. We've asked Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and commentator George Will is going to give a keynote speaker. Members of the Churchill family, his granddaughter, Edwina Sands, his great-grandson, Randolph Churchill, will be joining us virtually, I'm afraid, until pandemically permitting. We'll gather perhaps in the fall, but for March 5th, the actual anniversary date, we'll be celebrating virtually. And that's somewhat sad. We'd love to have people together. However, this allows us to open it to a truly a global audience to tune in and join us for the celebration.
Now, what's your impression of the importance of that speech? It's officially called the Sinews of Peace. Both historically and in terms of the 21st century, what would you say?
Well, you know, Churchill called the speech himself the Sinews of Peace. And we have in our collection the near final draft with the handwritten notes and last-minute edits. Churchill didn't actually choose the title of the speech. It was handwritten the day before he gave it, The Sinews of Peace. And what are sinews? Sinews are muscles or tendons, things that bind us together and make us stronger. And Churchill was arguing quite loudly that the relationship between the Allies, especially the British and the Americans, the special relationship, which we talk about all the time now in the media, referring to the relationship between the UK and the US, that special relationship, which is a term Churchill made popular in the speech here in Fulton, only working together as allies could they stand up to the threat of communism. And that's really what the Sinews of Peace were all about. And the speech is really, if we boil it down, about alliance building and standing up for liberty and freedom. And that's the message that Churchill gave quite clearly here at Westminster College 75 years ago.
Now, you're the curator of America's National Churchill Museum, which seems out of place for the United States and especially for a small town like Fulton. Could you tell us how it started and evolved?
Sure. Well, you know, the reactions to Churchill's famous Iron Curtain speech 75 years ago was mixed at the beginning. Some people thought Churchill was calling for World War III. It was not immediately well received. The Americans still remembered the Soviets as our allies that helped us win World War II. Uncle Joe Stalin, of course. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until later that Churchill's words seemed to ring truer and truer, you know, as the years went by. And you know, the speech by the early 1960s, the Cold War was in full force. The Berlin Wall was going up in Germany in 1961, and Westminster College decided to build a memorial and a museum devoted to Churchill in the spot where he gave the speech. So it was really a delayed reaction as Churchill's speech became, you know, prophecy fulfilled almost, and the museum was begun and conceived of in the 1960s. You know, at the same time as the Berlin Wall went up, so did the Churchill Museum.
Hmm. We're talking with Tim Riley of America's National Churchill Museum.
Tim, how did a 17th century London church by Christopher Wren end up on the campus of Westminster College in Fulton, and the Berlin Wall for that matter?
Well, you know, that's a remarkable story and a great question. You know, when the trustees and president and leaders of Westminster College wanted to establish this museum and memorial to Churchill, at first they talked about a statue or a sundial or a plaque, you know, but everybody does that. And they had this bold idea to relocate from central London to mid-Missouri a Christopher Wren-designed church. You know, Christopher Wren, the great architect who designed St. Paul's Cathedral in London, designed a smaller church nearby St. Paul's called St. Mary the Virgin Aldermanbury. It was all but destroyed in the Blitz in World War II. It was bombed. On December 29, 1940, the Germans dropped 20,000 incendiary bombs on London, and the church, the Wren Church that's now in Fulton, was gutted. It stood that way in ruins for 20 years, until Westminster College said, we'd like to relocate that stone by stone, 7,000 stones from central London to the middle of America in the heartland and rebuild it as a memorial to Winston Churchill. And that's how it came to be. And it's a fitting tribute, I think. Churchill was knocked down through his career many times and got back up, very much like that great men church. So that's the genesis of that story. And Churchill himself knew about it. You know, he was 88 years old when the decision to move the church was finalized. And he as an old man looked back fondly at his Fulton speech at Westminster College, and said, I think that's an imaginative concept, and may it be a symbol of peace between our two countries. And it stands as so today. And you ask about the Berlin Wall. In 1990, a year after the Berlin Wall fell, the concrete manifestation of the Iron Curtain, after all, a sculptor named Edwina Sands, a woman who happens to be Winston Churchill's granddaughter, brought 8 sections of the Berlin Wall over to the campus here, and it stands outside the museum. So we have an English church from the 17th century and a symbol of great peace, and a broken through section of the Berlin Wall, the formidable barrier that divided communism and freedom for so long. But once it came down, it stands in Fulton as a symbol. So we have this habit of bringing monuments from Europe to Mid-America.
I think I know the answer to the next question, but what did Churchill think of Fulton, and did he enjoy the show me hospitality of Missouri and speak about the importance and significance of his visit for years after the speech?
Well, you know, he I don't think Churchill knew what he was getting into when he said yes to the Westminster College. Here's a small town of 12,000 people, a college at the time that had 212 students, most of the men who were off to war and hadn't come back yet. So it was this tiny college. But because the president of the United States said this is a wonderful school in my home state, he took his word for it. And it was, and it is a great school in Missouri. Churchill, there was a parade, and everybody in Missouri, it seemed, turned up for the parade to catch a glimpse of the former prime minister and the president of the United States. They enjoyed a meal. They had all the fixings, fried chicken and Callaway County ham. Churchill remarked, Mrs. McClure, he said, "Madam, the pig has reached its highest form of evolution in this ham." So he really enjoyed himself.
Well, Churchill was a wartime prime minister of Great Britain, and you mentioned he was out of power in 1946. He did come back as prime minister. Do you think that his speech had anything to do with that?
You know, I think it did. You know, Churchill, as I mentioned, you know, when he lost that election in 1945, he was down in the dumps. I think he came back. The speech at Westminster College, the Iron Curtain speech, certainly rejuvenated his spirits and energy. He had more to say. You know, he was a great visionary observer of the geopolitical landscape in the world. And he saw the Soviet threat, and he warned, very much like he did in the 1930s with Germany. He saw Hitler and the rise of the Nazis long before many others did. And he warned. Unfortunately, no one would listen in the 1930s. And here in Fulton, he said, "Surely, ladies and gentlemen, we must not let that happen again." And I think his warning and what came to pass did actually revitalize his career. And you're right. He was elected prime minister again. His party was elected in 1951, and he became prime minister for the second time.
Now, could you elaborate on that? What are qualities of Churchill's leadership that can and should resonate today?
That's an excellent question. Visitors to the museum ask every day, you know, we need more Churchills. We need more visionary leaders. You know, I think one of the things, particularly now in the midst of a global pandemic, we're asked that question. You know, Churchill had a great gift for leading in times of crisis. He wasn't afraid to tell people, you know, how bad it was. You know, certainly to the British people in 1940, it was grim. You know, the Nazis were swallowing up all of Europe, and England seemed to be next. And Churchill was very clear. He said, "This is going to be tough. We have the almost insurmountable odds, but I think we can do it if we work together." And it was that bold leadership, telling it like it is, but also giving people courage. Courage was one of the qualities of Churchill's leadership that mattered most. Without courage, he said, that there's not much else. And he exhibited it in spades. So I think, you know, vision, courage, audacity. He wasn't afraid to be bold, very much like we were bold to bring a Wren church from London to Fulton. And it's a very Churchillian spirit. You know, those are qualities of Churchill's leadership that certainly matter and resonate today, as well as communication. I mean, he had a gift for words. He could make a great speech. He was quick with his one-liner. He employed humor. He was a full package. He really was, and that's what made him one of the great leaders of the 20th century.
Oh, we agree. We're talking with Tim Riley of America's National Churchill Museum.
Tim, talk about some of the other world leaders who have followed Winston Churchill and Harry Truman to Fulton. Presidents Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Gerald Ford, Margaret Thatcher, and Mikhail Gorbachev, among others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really is a who's who of global leaders, especially in the 20th century. You know, Churchill's speech had a ripple effect. What he said in Fulton at Westminster College impacted the world, and other leaders took note. You mentioned Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan came in 1990 to Westminster College. He dedicated the Berlin Wall sculpture that Churchill's granddaughter Edwina Sands did. He was here. You know, so this is the great communicator, talking about perhaps the greatest communicator in Winston Churchill. And this is the man who said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." 1 year after it fell, in November of 1990, he was in Fulton with President Reagan, dedicating a piece of that very wall. And a year and a half later, Mikhail Gorbachev, former president of the Soviet Union, who was ultimately responsible for the dismantling on that end of the Soviet Empire, was in Fulton in front of the same wall, making a speech. And Gorbachev warned of some of the next threats and examined Churchill's speech critically, looked at it. And then in 1996, Margaret Thatcher, another great leader, the Iron Lady, came to speak about the Iron Curtain, as I like to say sometimes. And she made a great speech in Fulton saying that you know, in 1996, she warned that one of the looming threats coming ahead was militant Islam. This was pre-9/11, pre-2001. And she, like Churchill before her, looked ahead and saw some unrest. And she too made a speech that unfortunately was somewhat prophetic. You know, George H.W. Bush, Gerald Ford. We've had a host of presidents and prime ministers make their way to the middle of America at Westminster College to literally follow in the footsteps of Winston Churchill to make great speeches. Recently, we've had General David Petraeus, former Secretary of State. Madeleine Albright was here recently. You know, it's a who's who of leaders on the global stage who seem to, when we ask, we're always delighted that they understand and recognize the importance of the Westminster College platform. If they want to make a serious speech about world affairs, this is the place to do it. It's a remarkable legacy to the power of the words that Winston Churchill spoke here 75 years ago.
And why is it so important to have a museum or institution that preserves and examines Churchill's legacy?
Well, I think today history sometimes gets a short shrift. You know, I think we don't always look back. Winston Churchill himself said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said essentially, the farther you look back, the farther forward you can see. He was a student of history. He always looked back, and he knew that, you know, if we didn't learn from the past to inform the present, we'd make the same mistakes in the future. And I think that museums and institutions and colleges and you know, even films and documentaries that talk about the past and critically help us to plot the course ahead. It worked for Churchill, and it certainly works here. And we'd like to say here at the museum, if history seems old and dusty, we're not doing our job. We try to make it relevant and alive today. And that's one of the reasons so many of these great leaders and so many students and visitors from out around the world come to experience the museum. And having monuments like the Berlin Wall in the middle of North America, or Christopher Wren Church, or you know, the near final draft of the Iron Curtain speech, Churchill's paintings and sculptures and a whole host of things in the museum really do take you back and make you realize what happened before, so we can learn from that past and not make the same mistakes we did previously.
There are many museums that honor former presidents, including the Harry S. Truman Museum in Independence, Missouri, but only one that honors a former prime minister. Have you visited any of those other museums, and are they similar to America's National Churchill Museum?
Yes, I like to say sometimes to visitors that we're like a presidential library for a British prime minister in the United States. and it's a bit odd. But, you know, Churchill was an honorary American citizen, so I suppose that counts. And his mother was from Brooklyn. So, you know, there's that. I have been to many of the presidential museums, and we're very similar in scope that you know, we preserve the legacy and some of the great artifacts and documents that Churchill were important to Churchill and shape a lot of the 20th century history that are here. That just down the road in Independence, you mentioned the Truman Library that's dedicated to Missouri's famous son, Harry Truman, who invited Churchill to come here. That's a terrific institution. In fact, we're partnering with them. Our programming on Friday, the 5th of March, the actual 75th anniversary day, will kick off with a stream from the Truman Library, and Harry Truman's grandson will participate along with Winston Churchill's granddaughter. So the next generation of the Trumans and Churchill, together with the Truman Library and the Churchill Museum, are bringing back the special relationship next Friday to mark the 75th anniversary. So we're very similar in scope and work with our colleagues at the presidential libraries. We did a great partnership with the Roosevelt Library in Hyde Park, New York, last year, and look forward to working with others as well.
Tim, we hear that the Churchill Museum includes a cabinet war room so that visitors can see what that room actually looked like when the British cabinet was agonizing over wartime decisions. What are the main things a visitor should see in the Churchill Museum?
Yes, well, you know, the Churchill Museum is in a bunker. It's underground. It's an expanded section under the great Wren Church of St. Mary the Virgin, Aldermanbury, and the Undercroft and underground outside. It really is like a bunker, very much like the war rooms in London. The permanent galleries explore Winston Churchill's life from childhood. You know, he's born to a mother from Brooklyn and a father, Lord Randolph Churchill. His grandfather was the Duke of Marlborough. So you see Churchill's early years. He struggled in school. I like to say that Churchill would not have been admitted to Westminster College. His grades just were not very good as a young man. He later succeeded, of course, but you know, some of the academics as an early child was not his strong suit. But you see that in the museum. And you trace his meteoric rise in politics and through the First World War, and then he had a major setback in the First World War and rose back up, and then another setback in the 1930s, became prime minister, then lost an election. You know, it's a seesaw roller coaster of an up-and-down career of Winston Churchill, and it's a great lesson that to all young people and all of us, that just because you get knocked down doesn't mean you're over, and perseverance is something, too. So the permanent galleries look at his leadership from his years as a young man to his death in 1965. But we also have rotating exhibits in galleries where right now we have on view our draft of the Iron Curtain speech I mentioned earlier that's there, and visitors can read the speech. It was written out in stanzas, almost like poetry, and you can see that up close and personal. At the museum, rotating exhibitions, Churchill's paintings. He is an avid painter. He loved to paint and observe the world and nature, very much like he observed geopolitics, knew that a brushstroke here, a brushstroke there in politics could change the world. Well, so could a dab of blue or a dab of red on a canvas could change the composition completely. And you can see that in his paintings in the museum. And of course, we have the marvelous Christopher Wren Church that was rebuilt in all its glory in the 1960s. You know, the 17th century church is here as well. So it really is a multifaceted, multi-layered historical site. And also on the campus, and people don't always remember it, and we point it out to visitors, but you know, the gymnasium where Churchill gave the speech in 1946 still stands, and is still used by the Westminster College basketball and volleyball teams today. For historians, it's wonderful. It looks like it did in 1946. I think the basketball team would like a new gym. But we simply can't touch that national landmark, and we appreciate it for the history that happened there. But that's what you can expect to see when you come to Fulton, Missouri. In the middle of the country, in the middle of Missouri, about 100 miles from St. Louis here. And it's certainly, I'm biased, I know, but it's certainly worth a trip.
I'd like to mention, too, that people that are going to the Winston Churchill Museum, which is actually America's National Churchill Museum, the people that are coming out there should also stop off in Kansas City and see the World War I Museum, a world-class museum. And if I'm not mistaken, Winston Churchill was also involved in World War I. Am I correct about that?
You are correct. You are correct. He was the first Lord of the Admiralty and later served in the trenches.
Okay. We're talking with Tim Riley of America's National Churchill Museum. Mary Ellen?
Tim, how do you acquire your artifacts? Were they loaned to the museum by Churchill's family and friends or by the British government?
We've been given gifts from family, from the government. We acquire from time to time. Of course, you know, the Iron Curtain speech and the drafts and things related to the 1946 museum were really simply in the college's files. The church was a gift in part from the city and diocese of London. Churchill's granddaughter negotiated the Berlin Wall sections as a gift from the East Germans. So every object has a story, and we are actively collecting today and growing the collection.
Hmm. Can visitors to the museum hear any of his speeches, including that Iron Curtain speech you mentioned?
Yes. You know, the museum is very interactive. There are videos and displays and sound recordings. You get to hear Winston Churchill's voice quite clearly at the museum, and it really takes you back. It really does. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to hear.
Just a couple of minutes left. Tim, how much did you actually know about Churchill before getting involved with the museum, and how did you get involved?
Well, you know, I became into Churchill through his artwork, actually, his paintings. I'm by training an art historian, and someone asked if we wanted to do an exhibition of Churchill's paintings, and I said I didn't know Winston Churchill was a painter. And that sparked an interest in an avenue, a path, and I learned that he was not only a painter but a great writer. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1953. You know, he was a great wartime leader, a great writer, a thinker, and you know, I started to learn, and I became hooked, like so many people do. He lived to be 90 years old. He was born in under Queen Victoria and died under the current Queen, Elizabeth II. It's a really remarkable span of history, and he's a man that always fascinates, and we're always learning from Winston Churchill. So I was hooked early on, became a Churchill nut.
Mary Ellen?
Can you comment on the value and importance of understanding the past to build a better future?
Yes, I think it's vital. I think it's very much vital that we understand what happened before us so we don't repeat the same mistakes time and again and learn from it. And it gives a certain amount of common cause, you know, where we came from. And the mistakes we made in the past, we need not make them again.
Okay. All right, Tim, I'm sorry. I'm running out of time. Special thanks to Tim Riley, Chief Curator of America's National Churchill Museum in Fulton, Missouri, for being our guest on Travelitch Radio.
Thank you.
And that is it for this edition of Travelitch. Next week, same time, same station, our guest will be Susie Wazell of Quebec Maritime. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg along with Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.